Hello, everybody, and welcome to another new edition of T Watches a Scary Movie. I, of course, am T, and we are talking scary movies. And don't adjust that dial. Yes, this is another audio-only episode of our show. Typically, you can see my, I'm told, quite handsome smiling face on this, energetically telling you about all the horror movies of the last week that I've watched, TV shows, stuff like that. But because I have a day job as well, right now my schedule kind of fluctuates. I have a great job, but my schedule fluctuates so much to where there are some days I just don't have the time that I need to really give y'all the great show that y'all need to have. And by that, I mean things like video clips and stuff like that, because it's a one-man show. I don't have anybody else working on this. It's just me. So last week's show was audio only. This week's show is going to be audio only. And then we might be able to get back to it next week, but for sure, at least the last week of January, we'll be back to seeing my face again. So I appreciate all of you tuning in. It means more than you will ever know. I appreciate it so much, y'all. First, want to let you know about the links you need to check out for my show. For our YouTube page, my YouTube page, to where we all of our new episodes are going up. That is your best way to stay up with everything that I put up on YouTube. Things like new episodes, unboxings, commentary, stuff like that. That is youtube.com/C/TheronReynoldsScaryMovie. Okay, check that page out, subscribe, and you'll get alerted when new videos are going up. And then Our Facebook group is definitely out there as well, too. That's facebook.com/group/TScaryMovie. You definitely want to subscribe to that, because that will let you know when we're doing things like watch parties, or sometimes I write up written reviews there as well. Usually depends if I can get the time to do it in the first place. So to subscribe to both of those links so you can stay up on everything going on with T Watches a Scary Movie. Now, before we get into the meat of the show itself, I want to remind y'all again about our watch parties we do weekly. Tonight, after this new episode, we are going to do Maximum Overdrive. And you do need to join the Facebook group to get the info for that. We had some issues in our last watch party on Saturday, which, by the way, was super awesome. We had a really, really good crowd on Saturday. We watched Spawn. We watched the first half of Salem's Lot, the 2004 version. We got Tales from the Crypt, Creepshow, Are You Afraid of the Dark? And then we watched episode 3 of The Stand as well. So keep in mind, because of some of the issues we've had, I'm trying to avoid putting that link up. I will try one more time with it tonight and see if we have any problems. And if we do moving forward, we're just going to have to directly get that to you. Maybe I'll make a mailing list as well to let you know what's going down. But we do have a watch party tonight after the show. Keeping with the Stephen King motif, we will be watching Maximum Overdrive. Some of y'all have been asking me to review this movie for a little while, and I fought for a while to think what I wanted to watch tonight. We considered It, the original miniseries, or either of the new films. 1408, Dr. Sleep was on the table. I even thought about moving up the other half of Salem's Lot. But I decided, ultimately, let's just do Maximum Overdrive, because then that kind of gives me an out, because those other movies are so damn long. And they're good, but I just got time for that. I got to work tomorrow, and I know some of y'all do as well. So make sure to hit the Facebook group. I'll post the link so you can join in on the watch party. That's going to start right after this episode. Should be about 9:05, 9:10 or so, okay? And again, make sure you come back on Saturday nights, because Saturday nights, we've been having some really, really good watch parties. We watch TV shows, some scary ones. As you've seen, I've added in commercials and music videos, and that has been a blast. We did the Michael Jackson Pepsi commercial with Alfonso Ribeiro Carlton from The Fresh Prince in it, and that was a real blast. Y'all already know how we do with monster ballads and buzz ballads and stuff as well, too. So please make sure that you tune in for that as well on Saturday. Go to the Facebook group so you can see it. And I'd like to start by saying happy anniversary to not only my favorite horror film of all time, but just in general, my favorite movie of all time. I've always floated between The Lost Boys, Starship Troopers, That's going to be Lost Boys, Starship Troopers, The Goonies, and Ocean's 11, and then this last film. But in the last few years, my fandom for it has just kept growing and growing and growing. And I can safely say it is my favorite movie of all time, which is Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight. Yeah, it is the 26th anniversary today, because today is January 13th, and Tales from the Crypt came out January 13th, 1995. Some of y'all have heard a lot of my stories about my experiences with Demon Knight and why I hold it so dear to my heart. I am going to do an episode coming up that we're going to talk about the three Tales from the Crypt movies, Demon Knight, Bordello of Blood, and Ritual. And then we're actually going to have a sequel to that show later on where we're going to talk about the three Tales from the Crypt movies that didn't end up being Tales from the Crypt movies, but they were originally supposed to. And of course, we're talking about Death Becomes Her, The Frighteners, and From Dusk Till Dawn, which, spoiler alert, if you didn't know, all three of those films were initially going to be Tales from the Crypt movies until they decided to just make them completely separately. So happy anniversary to Demon Knight. It's a fantastic film. If you have not seen it, you need to make sure that you do, because it really is so, so, so good. And with that, let's get into the main focus of our episode. Last week, we talked about the first two episodes of CBS All Access's new adaptation of The Stand. If you remember, The Stand is a story by Stephen King. It's a very apocalyptic, end of the world, kind of dystopian tale to where a virus wipes out the majority of humanity, and those that are left are forced to align themselves either with an old woman from Nebraska or a tall, dark man who resides in Las Vegas. Very fitting for the year that was 2020. Some of y'all have probably seen the original miniseries that had like Gary Sinise in it and Molly Ringwald. And this is CBS's All Access's new adaptation of that show. It's been pushed back a few times, and it finally debuted last month in December, and we're still going strong right now. We actually just watched episode 3 last week. We're going to watch episode 4 this week, so we'll kind of be caught up at that point. But we're going to talk about episodes 3 and 4. So if you remember, at this point, we've caught up to where most if not all of our characters have made it to the Boulder Free Zone. So Mother Abigail, as played by Whoopi Goldberg, has made it to the Boulder Free Zone. And now all of our other secondary characters have made their way there too. And while we're still getting some flashbacks, we're getting to see really how they're thriving and surviving in Boulder, which we're in Colorado, so it's fun that it's set there. I have no idea whether they actually filmed it. Nothing looks familiar, but we'll talk a little bit about that. Episode 3, entitled Blank Page, was really a big focus on Nadine Cross, who is played by Amber Heard. There's going to be spoilers, so let me just state that right now, that if you're looking to not be spoiled, you should not listen to this episode, and you shouldn't listen to the previous episode. This beats my 10-year rule, because you know the rule, the way it works. If it's been released in the last 10 years, I do my best not to spoil it for y'all. But you have to understand, this book has been out for a while. The miniseries was out in the early to mid-90s. At this point, it's kind of on you if you haven't seen it. I'm sorry, but there are going to be spoilers from this moment on. So turn it off if you don't want Stand spoilers, all right? So episode 3 gave us a lot more information on Nadine Cross. At the end of episode 2, Nadine started having a lot of visions of our bad guy, the tall man, the hard case, the walking dude, Randall Flagg, beckoning her to come join him. And this episode, we actually get a big old flashback of a further one than we've gotten already, to where Nadine was a child and with some friends in the orphanage that she lived in, she contacted Flagg, basically. So using a planchette, basically their own makeshift Ouija board, they're able to contact, they're trying to just talk to whoever, and they ended up reaching Randall Flagg, who even at that point made Nadine his queen. So let her know that that's her future for her. And what ended up happening to Nadine is that she ends up discovering this child, Joe, who, you know, we know he's been through a lot because he immediately tries to attack Larry because Nadine and this child, Joe, run across Larry Underwood, and he tries to cut him with a knife that he has. And we're led to believe that Joe's been through a lot, and that's a reason why he's mute, because he's a quiet boy, he doesn't really emote too much. And even more interesting is that even though, you know, we're kind of led to believe that Nadine kind of saved his life, because if he had been left at where he was at, you know, he probably would have died, he doesn't really want to be with Nadine. And it's obvious that we know that the reason why he doesn't want to be with Nadine is because he can sense something is wrong with her. He knows that something is absolutely off, and so he doesn't actually want to be around her at all. And Larry ends up bringing Nadine and Joe with him to basically get to Boulder. Because remember, at this point in the flashback section of this with Larry, they haven't reached Boulder yet. And he's been following the messages that Harold Lauder's been leaving along the roads and on trucks and stuff like that to get to where they're going. And he ends up bonding with Joe. And I mentioned in the previous episode that, hey, when are we going to finally hear Baby Can You Dig Your Man? Because they claim that it was played in episode 1 or 2. And I swear to God, I didn't hear it. But we do absolutely hear it in episode 3. They go to a baseball stadium and he starts playing it and he gets Joe into the guitar. And I found it very interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine about this, that in both the book and the original miniseries, you know, it's not a big point that Larry is white in the book and the miniseries, but a big plot point in both of those is that he has a dark sounding voice. He sounds like a black man singing. He's got a lot of soul into his voice, you know, and that was a big reason why everybody loved him. It's like, you got this great, you know, black man sounding voice. And they, you know, they even make a joke in the old miniseries. He, you know, he tells his mom, that brown sound do get around. And if you heard him in the original miniseries, they didn't really sound black to me, but, you know, whatever, because I'm sure he wasn't the one that sang their version of Baby Can You Dig Your Man. But in this one, it's almost like they parody that, because Larry's a black man in this episode, and if you hear his singing, he actually kind of sounds like a white folk singer, which is not an insult in the least bit, but he kind of sounds like, you know, he would be perfect, like, of Monsters and Men, or of Mice and Men, whatever the band is that made that song Little Talks, or like Mumford and Sons or something like that, which I do like those bands, but I actually found that, I felt that they were trying to be ironic with it compared to what they did with the original miniseries. But we finally get to hear the song, and it's not bad in the least bit, but again, the whole point of it is to kind of sow distrust a little bit more between Nadine and Larry. They don't seem to be going the path that was in either the books or in the original miniseries, which is that even though Nadine has promised the flag, you know, she's still not necessarily sure that that's what she wants to do. You know, she's still, like, she knows there's something wrong with it. Obviously, she's lusting for flags. She's got a passion for them. But she can clearly tell that there's something off about this. And the book and in the original show, her salvation was Larry. You know, if Larry has sex with her, then that's it. The connection to flag is broken and she can live her life. But they don't seem to be going that way, because there doesn't really seem to be any kind of tension between the two of them. Now, again, we're only up to episode 4, and that could very well change. But as I'm pretty sure the next episode, episode 5, is going to bring some pretty serious stuff to us, I just don't see that happening, honestly. I really, really don't. Again, they're making their way to Boulder to meet with pretty much everybody else at that point. And over on the other side of the country, we have, you know, our group of Harold and Fran, who finally come across Stu Redman. This is important because, keep in mind, Harold and Fran have been traveling just the two of them by themselves. And I had mentioned how much I enjoy Harold's character. It's nice having them build up his psychosis, because we still are really pulling for him. We still really want something good to come from Harold, even though, unfortunately, we know it's not going to go that route. Now, I'm kind of starting to feel they might not necessarily go that way. I think he's still going to die, unfortunately. But I get the feeling that with the way they're treating Nadine, they might even just have Nadine kill him and, you know, do all the bad stuff herself. But we'll see. But Harold and Fran run into Stu. And obviously, Harold's very distrustful, because this guy who's being extremely nice, You can't fight the fact that James Marsden as James Marsden as excuse me as Stu is a very good looking man. So of course, what's going through Harold's mind at that point is this guy is likely going to steal Fran away, and we know he's going to. Unfortunately, that is just Harold's life, but that's also that's what happens. And he's gonna take her. And she was never Harold's in the first place, which obviously builds the big problem with it. But we start to get to see way more of this toxicity from Harold, because, you know, he's kind of like he basically blackmails Fran into leaving with him. Like, hey, you know, I'm the guy that saved you. I'm the guy that brought you back to life when you try to commit suicide. Are you going to go with this asshole with a gun who you've known for all of 20 seconds? And it's a really good point, even if it is a toxic way to get her to come with them. Because, hey, you know, you don't know anything about him. Why the hell are you just going to go off and be with this guy when you know absolutely nothing? So they leave Stu, and Stu ends up meeting Glenn Bateman, who is played in this version by Greg Kinnear. Now, I've been giving parallels to the old cast back in the original miniseries. And if you do remember the original miniseries here, Glenn Bateman was an older character. And it's not that Greg Kinnear isn't old or anything like that, but in terms of, you know, who was there at that point, they had, oh man, and I'm terrible at this, y'all, but it's hard to remember a lot of these things off the top of your head. Ray Walston, I want to think say who it was. Yeah, Ray Walston, who I don't remember how old he was at the time, but a very fantastic actor who was in, you know, My Favorite Martian, and, you know, he was in Popeye and Fast Times and everything like that as well, too. But it's very interesting because I feel that some ways the updating of these characters works really well. And this is one of those times where it does, because I do actually feel that the way Greg Kinnear portrays Glenn Bateman is actually very similar to what I would expect out of, you know, that kind of character this day and age. You know, they're obviously very smart. They're college educated. They have very big views on philosophies and religion and stuff like that. And hey, they also smoke a lot of weed too. And what's even more interesting, what's even more interesting as well too, we get to see Kojak, and we're also given the information that a lot of dogs have passed away from Captain Trips as well too. So it's kind of fun when he meets Stu, because everybody, you know, is like saying, hey, put your guns down, you know, don't shoot me and stuff. But he's more concerned about the dog Kojak, because again, there's not really many dogs out there. Nobody's really seen any alive dogs out there either. So it's like, nope, this could be the very last one. Please don't shoot him. So this episode is really about a lot of characters actually meeting each other. The previous three episodes, the previous two episodes were really a lot about still these separate groups kind of moving around the place. But episode three is kind of getting our groups to where they need to be. We get Glenn with Stu, Fran and Harold are still together, Joe and Nadine are with Larry, and even Nick Andros finally meets Tom Cullen. And remember, Nick Andros, he's deaf, he's mute as well. And what happens is he ends up in a bar to where he gets into a fight. He gets his ass beat basically by this guy who he accidentally spills his drink there. And from there, you know, he gets knocked out, he wakes up in the hospital, his eye is gone, which I'm glad they went that route, because that was actually a big point in the original miniseries, because in the book he does lose his eye. You know, he gets punched in the eye and he ends up losing that. And that's a big point in the book, but in the movie, in the original miniseries, he just gets his ass beat up really badly by by this guy and like his friends, and that's kind of it. Like there's no like lasting effects. And the whole idea here is that it makes Flag's offers and his temptations to Nick way more important, because at that point you can't hear, you can't speak, and now you only got one eye. Why wouldn't you take any deal that Flag's putting on the table? You're now even more useless than you were before. And it shows us again the character of Nick, because he's not bulking at that. He doesn't need any of it at all. He's gotten by without a lot of those things before. He'll get by perfectly fine just now. But he meets Tom Cullen. Tom Cullen, who has a number of learning disabilities. And Tom Cullen is, oh man, what joy here. that we get from Brad William Hinkey, who plays Tom Cullen. You might remember him from Orange is the New Black. He played guard Piscatella in that. And funny enough, he actually played for the Broncos back in 1989 as well. So that's super interesting information. But he's been in a lot of stuff. You know, he was in World Trade Center. He was in Space Jam, actually. He was in Pacific Rim. He was in Split. He's got a lot of stuff to his credit, to be completely honest. Matter of fact, I think he was in the first season of Dexter, too, now that I think about it. He was one of Ice Truck Killer's victims who got his leg cut off, but he ended up surviving. He was the security guard. That's right. But Nick Andros meets Tom Cullen, and Nick's already annoyed because, you know, Tom's just talking a mile a minute and he can't read. So him and Nick don't have a great way of communicating with each other. And one thing that's kind of lost that I love the fact that, you know, we're going to talk about it with episode 4, but the fact that he can't even know Nick's name because Nick has no way of actually communicating that over to him. But anyway, those are some of the relationships we get to see in episode 3. Along with that, we get our first kind of like serious deadly act from Flag. Flag actually sends a messenger from Vegas to the Boulder Free Zone to basically let them know that he's coming. He's gonna take over and he's gonna destroy all of them. One thing that Flag starts doing is anybody that dissents from him, he's crucifying them on telephone poles. So this man shows up, you know, with all these crucifixion wounds, and it's left to the Boulder Free Zone Committee, which consists of Stu, Fran, Larry, Glenn, Nick, and one character who they've actually gender swapped. So if you remember in the original stand, we had Ralph Brettner. And Ralph ends up picking up Tom and Nick on their way to get to Boulder. And he kind of lets them know what they're saying to each other. And then he's a part of the committee. He's this big, nice guy. But as a matter of fact, they have actually swapped that out. And Ralph Brettner has now become Ray Brettner, who is played by Irene Bedard, who, if that name doesn't sound familiar to you, I'm going to remind you of that. She played the title character in the 1995 Disney classic Pocahontas, which is one of my top 3 Disney movies. And I didn't know that because she's been in actually a few things that I've seen. She was in this movie I watched back in film school called Smoke Signals. And she's been in a few other things as well, too, that I've seen. But I didn't recognize her. And shocked to me to find out that, hey, that is absolutely the voice of Pocahontas that's playing Ray Brettner. So pretty cool to see her. You can tell she's kind of a no-nonsense woman. And it seems like she's there to be the protection of Mother Abigail in this iteration of the story. And she's part of this committee as well, too. And this committee finds out, again, about what Flag is doing to people that dissent from them and what's kind of going on in Las Vegas. And, you know, they're trying to decide whether or not they actually believe what they were told. Because there's no guarantee that that's what's happening. Even though, at this point, all of them have dreamt of Mother Abigail. And all of them have dreamt of Randall Flagg as well, too. So, you know, just because they have proof doesn't mean they actually believe that. And our end of the episode features Nadine being told by Randall Flagg to kill Mother Abigail and the committee, specifically by using Harold. Now, it's not a bad episode. The problem I'm having with this show is that it's starting to not be particularly interesting. And that's a harsh criticism because it's not like the old 1994 adaptation was necessarily that deep. Both of these are still missing a lot of the heart that was in Stephen King's original novel. But When I sit down to watch the 1994 miniseries, I kind of felt like I'm watching an event, you know, like there's a lot to it. They don't do so well with a lot of the characters in it, but at least the events of the story seem way, way more interesting, if that makes any sense. The problem with this CBS version is they do the flip of that. The characters are much better than what they were in the 1994 version. At least most of them are, but the story itself is still kind of boring. We are halfway through this show because keep in mind, there are only 9 episodes to this miniseries that CBS All Access is doing, and we're 4 episodes in, and I feel like not a lot is happening. And I get it. Episode 9 is actually a brand new ending that Stephen King wrote for, specifically for this, which I'm very interested to see. I get the feeling this might actually end on a bad note compared to the book in the original miniseries, which kind of ends on a moment of hope at that point. And the thing is that the last two, like episodes 7 and 8, titled The Walk and The Stand, are clearly going to be when a number of our characters go to confront Flag in Vegas. So episodes 5 and 6 isn't going to be that much. We're going to get a lot of big events in it, but I wonder if it's going to feel rushed once it's happened, once it goes through and happens. I don't know. I'm hoping for the best, but we'll see. Episode 4, we get a little bit more expansion on the characters too. So, you know, Harold straight up with Franny about how he feels about her. And obviously Franny doesn't feel those feelings back. And you feel bad for Harold, but at the same time, again, like, she's told him. She's not interested. There's nothing there between the two of them at all. And unfortunately, what happens is when they set back on the road, they end up running into a rapist. Who, this was actually a big part of the books, because in the books, what happens, and I don't remember whether it was Harold and Franny who came across. I know Stu definitely did for sure, but there's a group of people who basically have all these women captured, and they're holding them for exactly what you think you are, for sexual slavery. And in this one, it's just this one guy who has a couple women, specifically the character Dana Jurgens, who, you know, is from the book in the original miniseries. And basically, Harold gets the shit beat out of him and is about to be forced to watch this man rape Franny before Stu and Glenn show up. And between all of them and Dana, who kills the guy, they basically overpower the man and they end up getting free at that point. Now, they discuss, you know, Mother Abigail and Randall Flagg and trying to figure out what it is. And it's actually interesting because up to this point, you know, Harold hasn't really interacted with anybody else besides Fran. So to have somebody else like Glenn kind of explain the reason why they need to investigate Mother Abigail is really good. Because Glenn kind of puts it out to him and says, look, I mean, it's like, you're a man of science. I get it. We're all having dreams. Could be like mass psychosis or something like that. But as a man of science, you owe it to yourself to see this through, fake or not, because you need to know. That's the way hypotheses work. You say, well, there's no way this is real. Now you got to go figure out whether or not that's true. So I love that interaction between them, because it was fun to have somebody who could actually challenge Harold intellectually, because Stu and Franny are great, but they're not that they're not smart, but they're not on the intellectual level that Harold's really going to take anything from them. Seriously. So they all decide that they're going to go to Boulder together. And unfortunately, Harold's night gets worse after he's already been beat up and emasculated by this rapist. He then sees that Franny is taking solace in Stu at that point, to where she finally reveals to the first person, which is Stu, that she's pregnant. So that's what we get over there. Nick and Tom, who are still on their way to meet Mother Abigail, end up running across Julie Laurie. And if you remember, Julie was actually played in the original series by, Shawnee Smith from the Saw movies. And same kind of idea is that, you know, Nick and Tom are kind of running through a store, you know, trying to live, trying to make sure they're getting by while they're still on their trek. And obviously Nick can't hear Julie, and Julie approaches him, and Julie hasn't been around anybody in a while and immediately tries to jump Nick's bones. And in the book, they have sex. Let me just be clear. If you haven't read the book, Julie and Nick have sex in the book. But in both the old miniseries and in this one, it doesn't happen, which I'm not saying we need it, but I think it also, in my personal opinion, I feel that's not needed, because by Nick not doing it, he's basically giving up the chance to get something he probably doesn't get on a regular basis. You know, Nick blames God for his condition. He doesn't really want to believe in God because everything that's happened to him, he's kind of spiteful and resentful about everything. And it's probably safe to assume that even though he's a good looking man, he probably just doesn't get a lot of action, which is hard to believe in the old miniseries, because we're talking about young Rob Lowe. Come on, son. Rob Lowe is getting all the action back in the 90s, all right? But Nick, who's played by Henry Zaga in this one, who was actually Sunspot in The New Mutants, by the way, which we watched in a watch party, and I reviewed that, said it was one of the 10 best horror films to come out in 2020. He's not a bad-looking guy in this one either, but Again, he turns down Julie's advances, and then that's when Tom Cullen shows up, and basically Julie's trying to convince Tom to kill himself because he's useless, and Nick sticks up for his friend, and, you know, it ends up the two of them getting ran off by Julie, who has a shotgun, which, obviously, you know, you don't want to get shot or anything like that. And they eventually make their way to Mother Abigail, who ends up helping them get back to Boulder, where they ultimately need to be. And it's a very sweet and touching moment when Nick and Tom encounter Mother Abigail and finally meet her. It's super awesome. Outside of that, back in the current timeline, the Boulder Free Zone Committee decides that they need to send spies over to Vegas to basically investigate the threat that was told from them by the crucified man in the last episode. And they nominate, you know, three members to go and do it, which includes Dana, who they just rescued from the rapist. They nominate Judge Harris, and they nominate Tom Cullen, you know, each for different reasons for going out there. And, you know, we don't know if it's going to be successful. They automatically assume all of them are going to die, and we'll see what ends up happening as the episodes come along, because there's no promises in this version, obviously. But then that's when Nadine puts her plan into motion. Basically, she tries to seduce Harold and convince him that he has to kill Stu and the rest of the Boulder Free Zone Committee. And again, in the book and in the original miniseries, it was... And not that Nadine was nice. Nadine's not nice when she's doing Flag's work or anything like that. But it's kind of hard to ignore, and I've said this already, what's going on with Amber Heard in the news right now with her and Johnny Depp. Because it's like, man, oh, Nadine sucks. But it's like, is it Nadine that sucks, or is it Amber Heard that's just a terrible person, you know? So it's really hard to put a pulse on that. But basically, she puts the wheels in motion for Harold to kill, you know, Stu and the rest of the Free Zone Committee and Mother Abigail here in Boulder. And they end up going, Harold gets an idea from a ski patrol nearby, and they go and investigate and find explosives. And unfortunately, that ends with Harold killing his friend, played by Eon Bailey, Teddy. Nadine ends up shooting Teddy, or Terry, I forget. And that's kind of the end of it. Between these two episodes, I do have hope for this show. But again, I can't lie. These first four episodes of The Stand have just not been as engaging to me as I've hoped. I am going to go back and read The Stand again sometime here in the next couple of months, just because why not? I'll have the time to do it, and it'll help me also identify a lot more differences between this, between the book and this version as well, too, because it was easy to kind of point those out in the previous one. And I know they're going to adapt a lot of big things that weren't in the previous series as well, a lot of them involving the trash can man that's going to be played by Ezra Miller, but we are not there just yet. I'm keeping up with it for y'all. I'm going to try my honest best. Like I said, the characterization is really good. It just feels like there's not a lot actually going on. And a quick call out there. Yeah, Eon Bailey's whole thing is about starting up like a new drive-in theater, basically, or like a big amphitheater to watch movies and stuff. And he asks whether The Rock is still alive, the Herald, and, you know, is holding a copy of Skyscraper, which, God, that movie is terrible. It's so interesting that The Rock makes one good movie, one bad movie, and he just keeps that back and forth. But that's kind of it. I know that I more so described what happened in the previous episodes than really talked about it, but it's kind of all the same. There's really not that much to elaborate on with it. I'm hoping for the best, that this show will honestly get better, but I just don't know. All the action is going to be in the next five episodes for sure. And if they don't change a lot of stuff with it, that could end up being really, really good. But we just won't know until it happens. So keep up with this. Next week, obviously, we're not going to be discussing The Stand because I want to do two episodes at a time. But I'll probably start adding them into other stuff that we're going to talk about. Okay. So that is going to do it for tonight's show. I appreciate y'all tuning in. Please make sure, again, to go back to the Facebook group. That's where I got the link posted. So if you want to watch Maximum Overdrive with us tonight, that is starting right after this episode. And it's going to be a great, fun time. Get to see kids getting ran over by steamrollers. Giancarlo Esposito is going to get electrocuted at the beginning of the movie. It's so much fun. fun. You got Emilio Estevez fighting the Green Goblin. So make sure to go to the Facebook group for T Watches a Scary Movie so you can get the link for that. And then, of course, tune in Saturday. Come back to the Facebook group on Saturday to join our Scary TV Watch Party. It's so freaking fun. It's awesome. I do take requests for music videos and stuff like that. Our lineup is likely going to change at the end of January as well, too. I'll add and remove a few things on there. We're getting towards the end of the first season of Spawn. We're getting towards the end of the first season of Tales from the Crypt. We're going to finish up Salem's Lot this week. And we still got great episodes of Creepshow, Are You Afraid of the Dark? Coming up as well for y'all too. So I appreciate everybody joining. Comment, let me know what you want me to watch. Let me know what you want me to see. I have a special guest coming in a couple weeks, my good friend Mr. William R. Washington from RBR Weekly Wrestling Talk is going to come on here, and because we are huge wrestling fans, we are going to talk some horror movies with wrestlers. I don't want to spoil anything, but They Live is absolutely going to be one of those movies. Doom is going to be one of those movies as well, too. I know everybody hates Doom. I do not, as a spoiler. I actually enjoyed the Doom movie. But in a couple weeks, we are going to talk wrestlers in horror movies. That's going to be a great discussion to have Will on the show. And I'm going to have some other great guests coming in over the next few months as well. So tell me in the comments what you want to hear, what you want to see. But also, tell me what you think of The Stand. Am I crazy and this show is actually really, really good and it's just going over my damn head? Or am I right? And this show absolutely sucks dick, and there's no excuse for it being as bad as it is. And again, I say that it's not that bad, but it's just not as good as I want it to be. Either way, tell me in the comments. We'll talk a little bit about that next week as well, too. Make sure to go over to the Facebook group so you can see the watch party. As always, y'all, I'm T. We've been talking scary movies. Stay scared.